This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And we're going to be talking a lot of sports today. We're going to talk a little bit of NBA a little bit later on. We're going to be talking about the big fight coming up this weekend by with Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. We're also going to be talking hockey today with Neil Koepke. So we've got a lot going on, and hopefully we're going to talk some boxing as well with Seth Mitchell right here on AM 870 WKAR. So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. I want to start out by telling you that Seven Lugnuts made the All-Star team coming up. Seven Lugnuts from the Midwest League made the All-Star team. Pitchers Justin Nicolino and Aaron Sanchez, Noah Syndergaard, and A.J. Meyer. Second baseman John Birdie and outfielder Chris Hawkins and Kevin Pillar will represent the Lansing in the 2012 All-Star game. So congratulations that our teams, our all teams have showed up at the All-Star game, and that's really a great honor for them. Well, right now, let's talk a little boxing with Seth Mitchell. Had a chance to talk with Seth the other day. He had a fight scheduled against Jonathan Banks coming up in July, but that's been postponed due to a hand injury. So let's talk with Seth about what's going to happen for the next few months. So let's bring him in. Seth, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Okay. Hey, it's good to hear from you. And yeah, you said you had a hand injury. That's why they had to postpone the fight that you had scheduled with Jonathan Banks, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I sprained my MCL in my right hand in my last fight.
Okay. So that's put you out of commission. Not for a long time, but it'll just put it probably you won't fight till probably September now. Probably, I guess that would probably be a best guess estimate. Around September will be your next fight?
Around September, yeah. That's probably a good, fair estimate.
Yeah. Now, what will you work on? I know we talked the other day. What will you? You said you're going to be working on some things. What are some of the things that you feel you need to work on and just to improve on somewhat?
I'm still learning in my boxing career, so it's just more time for me to work on and polish up my whole game, especially, you know, more head movement and, working on the jab, giving more angles. So I think everything happens for a reason, and I just use this time to try to fine-tune and tune up some of the things that we've already been working on, but just put more emphasis on it.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea to do something like that. Yes, because that's one thing. Yeah, that's, you know, getting a lot of head movement. I don't know if you watched the old fights of Joe Frazier. He was great at moving his head. As for, you know, he was a little bit smaller heavyweight, but boy, he was hard to hit. But he moved. He used his head movement all the time. He was a great one. And you just don't see a much head movement today from any boxers at all. I say it would definitely be a good thing if you do it. And any other boxers, it would help if they would get in the ring and start moving the head, because, you know, you don't want to be just a stationary target, but it looks like it's that way today for a lot of fighters, a lot of guys in the fight game.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of fighters, you know, should implement more head movement and the use of the jab. I think that's mainly the jab is like a lost art in boxing. That's something that I definitely want to try to perfect in my arsenal.
Oh, for sure. The jab has to be better, and like I think we talked about before, going to the body. You don't see a lot of guys going to the body. Everyone wants to get the head and think they can knock someone out if they can get a good headshot in. That's why you have to, you know, use the body much more. So yeah, if you can do those things, that's certainly going to help you in your career. Now I've seen Jonathan Banks a few times, even probably been a referee on some of his fights. He's a pretty good fighter. He's a pretty good fighter. I know it'll be another test for you, a different style. But you know, he's a good fighter, and he's you know, growing as a heavyweight. He's trying to grow into the heavyweight. He's coming up from what, cruiserweight or light heavyweight, to heavyweight. So he's planning on being experience as a heavyweight. He's had like 20-something fights, I know. So that should be a very good test for you when that comes up.
I think so as well. It'll pose a different threat for me. As you stated before, he's coming up from cruiserweight. So he has a lot of mobility. He uses his legs, and he's pretty fast and throws punches and bunches. And anytime you have any fighter that's in the ring that throws punches and bunches, it always poses a threat. So I was definitely, you know, looking forward to the fight. You know, sorry for Jonathan Banks that the fight couldn't happen when it was supposed to happen. I know how hard fighters train, and you know, they get their motors running. They're looking forward to a certain fight. This is a fight that's going to be on HBO, so it was a big venue for him. And hopefully, we can still make that fight happen when I get back into action. But I'm definitely looking forward to the fight.
Yes, and he's being trained. He's one of Emmanuel Stewart's fighters. I think he's still being trained by Stewart. So I don't know if you look at certain fighters or certain management style, you know, because Stewart's, all of Emmanuel Stewart's fighters, they have like a certain style of how they fight. I don't know. Do you gather that if you watch film on some of the guys or some of Stewart's guys, they all sort of have a similar style?
Absolutely. Manny Stewart is a Hall of Fame trainer. You know, he teaches a certain style. His fighters, he's an offensive-minded trainer, mm-hmm. and his fighters tend to be offensive-minded fighters. And, you know, they carry their right hand a certain way, and their money punch is their right hand, and they definitely come to fight. So there's some things that Emmanuel Stewart's fighters, they have certain mannerisms that you can try to defend against. But to answer your question, Emmanuel Stewart fighters, they have a certain, they call it the Kronk style.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, they all have that certain kind of style. Now when you talk, when you look at the other fighters that have that kind of a style, I mean, yeah, that's more of a style. Like you say, it's an offensive style, and they're trying to get some power. I mean, his fighters, yeah, some of them have some pretty good defense, but you know, that's not their bread and butter. It's going. They love to go for the knockout for the most part.
Absolutely, and their offense. You know, some people say offense make defense, and his fighters tend to hold to that. They like you said, they bring excitement, and he definitely tries to, you know, have his fighters go in there and get you out of there, but. You know, their bread and butter punch is their right hand.
Yeah, and so now in your training, as you say, you're going to be working on that jab more so, working on head movement, and you'll probably work on the going to the body as well. You do all those kind of things while you're training, or can you do much right now, or do you just have to, can you run and do things like that? You just can't use that hand, or will you be able to use it for a little bit?
No, I can do pretty much everything except for, I'm not using my right hand right now. I know this is probably going to be out of commission for probably about 6 to 8 weeks. I can like shadow box, you know, with my right hand, and I can do lift weights, like machine weights, but not anything like punching with my right hand. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, and I'm just using this time. I'm high-spirited, you know. I'm disappointed that I couldn't fight July 14th, but I'm not down at all. You know, this is just a little stepping stone that I got to get past and, you know, continue on this road, this journey that I'm on. So I'm excited about, you know, the situation that I'm in. It's just a time for me to get better. And, you know, who knows why it happened, but I believe everything happened for a reason, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to try to take full advantage of it.
Okay. Now, I know you're in good shape, but do you feel you have to get in better shape, or do you worry at all about possibly overtraining, or is that thought in your mind at all?
You mean possibly like overtraining while I'm in this period right now?
Right.
I mean, I'm with myself and my trainer. We go about it in a smart fashion. I'll be training. I'll be in the gym, you know, 2 or 3 days a week for the next, you know, 2 months. Well, we definitely won't overtrain. I'll just work on some stuff that I haven't been working on as far as my training, just switching it up. But I won't overtrain. I'll keep my weight at about, you know, low 50s. And, you know, just stay right there until I get a fight schedule. And like I said, hopefully that'll be in September. But we won't overtrain. We'll train hard, train smart, but I definitely won't be overtrained.
Okay. Now, you got the one fight. Do you think you might get two fights in this year or maybe just one more fight and then move on to the following year?
I mean, I hope I'll get two fights. You know, hopefully I can fight again in September. Probably mid to early September, and then fight it, and then close the year out in December. But like I've always said, when people ask me about my schedule, and I say, good Lord's willing, I don't have any L's, and I don't have any setbacks, no injuries, and things like that. And, you know, this is my first, I'm blessed, man. This is my first time in 6 years of almost 6 years of boxing, amateur and pro, that I've ever had to pull out of a fight. I've ever had any injuries. So we're just going to roll with the punches, as they say in boxing, and, you know, see what's next. But hopefully I can get back in there in September and then finish off in December.
Are you going to go to the upcoming fight this weekend by Timothy Bradley and Manny Pacquiao? And if you do, what would you look to learn from a fight like that?
I'm not going to go. I'll definitely glued in front of the TV. Very intriguing fight to me. I think it's a pick-em fight. I think if I give Pacquiao I can't give anybody an edge, man. It wouldn't surprise me if Bradley upset Pacquiao. I just think he has that what I call dog. He has that intangible in him that he's mentally strong, and I just see something in him. I think he's so determined that but he is fighting Pacquiao, and Pacquiao is, you know, in my book, number two, you know, pound for pound behind Mayweather. So it's going to be an intriguing fight. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to that as well, because you're right. Though he does have a lot of intangibles. Bradley does, and like you say, we definitely know he's got a lot of dog in him. So hopefully that dog comes out and he'll get the chance of that upset. I mean, we know Pacquiao's probably got 2 to 3. I mean, maybe 3. More, maybe 4 more fights. He's getting close near the end of his reign. We saw that Winky Wright went retired this weekend, and Sugar Shane Mosley also retired. Both those guys are at 40, but they've had a long career and a good career. And then we saw what Antonio Tarver. He's 42, and he got beat. And he's been fighting, but he was a late bloomer. He started late in his career. I think he started at 28 or 29, but he's had a pretty good career itself, even though he started late. But you know, that's the game. That's why one reason why I like the fight game so much, because even if you start late, if you can fight your way up to the top in a relatively short period of time, if you got a good solid base.
Absolutely. So, and did you see the Tarver Coyote fight?
Yes.
What'd you think about it?
Yeah, Tarver. I mean, Tarver came on near the end. I thought that Coyote. He was up at first, and then Tarver fought back, and he started fighting more near the end. I think Carver was fighting more of a strategic fight and a deliberate fight. Even though he had commentated on some of his fights earlier, you know, it's different when you get in the ring, as opposed, as you know, sitting in the sidelines talking
Absolutely.
About them. Yeah, and he fought a pretty good fight. He probably should have been more aggressive earlier, I would say.
Absolutely, I agree. I thought it was a close fight. Like you said, I think Tarver lost the first half of the fight, and then, you know, he started to, you know, take control the second half of the fight. But I thought it was a close fight.
It was. It was a close fight,
and it ended in a draw.
Yep, that means it might be happening again in the near future.
Yep, it might be.
Hey, Seth, I want to thank you for being with me today, and I'll call you back again, and we'll talk some more boxing at another time, my friend. And, hey, best of luck while you're still training, and, you know, just get healthy, and we'll see you back in the ring in a couple of months.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks,
hey, thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Seth Mitchell talking with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Republican governors and even some Democratic mayors are reducing the scope of public employee unions. The number of union shops in the private sector has been dwindling for decades. And in this economy, a lot of people see strikes as all but unthinkable. I'm Neil Conan. Who needs a union? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl. Our weather forecast, today will be partly sunny, isolated light showers, and a high of 71. Partly cloudy tonight, the low 50. Tomorrow's high 75, partly sunny with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. Partly sunny with a high of 78 on Thursday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now let's talk a little hockey, a little Stanley Cup Finals with our good friend Neil Koepke. Unfortunately, Neil, as Neil knows, he made I guess he got on the wrong side of a bet with our friend Ricardo Cooney. He wanted to spice it up, but Neil picked New Jersey, which is now trailing 3-0 to the Los Angeles Kings. But Neil, I think you might can come back. They might can win a game or two. I don't know if they can win more than 2 games, but you know, your boy Rico's saying that, hey, they're going to get swept out. I don't know if they're going to get swept out. Obviously, they're in that mode, and they're in the Devils' way, and the Devils could be swept. But it's been surprisingly a tough match that so far the Kings have done everything they've wanted to and had everything going their way.
It's really admirable when you consider the fact that they've not lost a game on the road in these Stanley Cup playoffs. And, of course, they started every series on the road because they were the 8th seed in the West. It's just a phenomenal run that they put together here, and certainly one that no one saw coming. I mean, I don't think anybody out there when the Stanley Cup playoffs started in the middle of April said, I'm picking the Kings to go a long way here and maybe win the Stanley Cup. And the same thing for the Devils, for that matter, which is the craziness that you've got in the Stanley Cup Finals. Two teams that you didn't even think might get past the first round because the Devils were playing Florida and the LA Kings were playing the best team in the West, and that was the Vancouver Canucks. So big surprise overall, and the fact that they're so dominant, Earl, I think is what is the story of the Finals right now. They just don't make mistakes, and they have just a great defensive style in terms of just possessing the puck and then defending well. They're not a team like the Rangers that block shots and are just so pro defensive. They're more of a team that is defensive because A, they've got a great goaltender that is stopping shots in key situations in Jonathan Quick, and also they've got an offense and a full of fours that are very good, and that they're physical. They're skilled, and they're making plays. And it's a deadly combination right now, and certainly one that I would think everybody in the hockey world expects the Kings to win again in the craziness at the Staples Center on Wednesday. And like you say, if the Devils manage to get a game, well, then you're just going back into the Kings' wheelhouse because you're going back on the road, and that would probably be a Saturday night game in which the Devils would not win back home. Crazy things have happened, but still, just the way it looks like now, I think the last night's game, which was a winnable game if the Devils would have just played a little better and got some breaks, and the Kings not, I think it's taken the heart and soul out of the team now. Now you just got to go out and have some fun, play it on the line, and see where it goes. But
as you know, when you're down 3-0,
yes,
it's not over yet, but it's just close to being over, as you know.
You're right, and that's one thing. When you get down 3-0, we've talked about it in other sports and everything, it's awful hard to close a team out and get that fourth win because, hey, when you're down 3-0, you just let it all hang out. And I'm quite sure the Devils are going to let it all hang out, in that next game because they're down that 3-0, and that's all you can do because, when you're facing elimination like that, you just let it all hang out. You give it everything you got.
Yeah, and the Devils have the pride, and they go, at least let's try to keep the Kings from having win it at home, and let's go back. And if we go back home, and now you're going to a situation where maybe now you could steal one. The same thing happened to the Kings in the series against the Phoenix Coyotes. They won the first three, and then they lost game four at home to the Coyotes, went back to Phoenix and actually had to go into overtime. And that was that crazy overtime in which there was Dustin Brown kneed one of the Coyotes and injured him, and then it was a brawl a little bit, and then within 20 seconds they scored the winning goal and the series was over. But still, have the Coyotes won right there to make it 3-2, now you're going back to L.A. with some pressure on L.A. So, again, you just got to take it, the next game and see. It doesn't look good for the Devils just because the Devils' mindset is just so, they've only scored two goals in three games, Earl, and two of those goals, both of those goals were scored on a deflection off the chest of a King, and the other one was a deflection in front of the net by Carter that just beat Jonathan Quick. So two goals, both deflections, both a little bit fluky, and that's where you stand now. So your confidence level can't be very good. You've got Kovalchuk and Parisi. Just things aren't going well for them. They're not involved, engaged as much as you think. And the big part of the reason, again, goes back to what the LA Kings are doing. And then in this series, Earl, when there's been some life for the Devils, that they've managed to put some pressure and control the game, that's when the Kings goaltender Jonathan Quick has been exceptional. And that's when the Kings' defense has been pretty good. Case in point, last night in the first period of a 0-0 tie, there was a 5-on-3 for more than a minute for the Devils. And the Devils just looked like they looked out of sorts still, but the Kings defended so well, were aggressive, were throwing their bodies at the puck, were in the right lanes. Matt Green, our good friend from Grand Ledge, mm-hmm. Defenseman for the Kings, was just exceptional. He was getting a lot of credit and rave notices from the people on Hockey Night in Canada last night as far as how he played and how he's played in the series. But he's not the top defenseman. He's probably on the second set. But he is such a valuable defenseman right now as for a team guy that he really has elevated his game and deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. But again, you add all those up, Earl, and that's what makes a great team is the combination of a lot of players you didn't expect to raise their level and playing at a high level. And when you start with probably the best goaltender in the NHL right now, and Jonathan Quick, it's a hard combination to beat.
Yeah, Neil, now, what happened? How did all this develop so quickly with L.A.? Because, like you said, none of us saw it coming in the beginning. How were they during the regular season? I mean, they just got in the playoffs being an 8th seed, and then it seemed like the light just turned on. What happened to the Kings during the regular season and now?
Well, during the regular season, the Kings were a major underachiever. They were just a team that just couldn't score goals. They had some good talent with Kopitar. Andrei Kopitar is an elite-level forward. You'd have to say he's a top-10 forward in the NHL, and he's got size, speed, and skill. And then Mike Richards was acquired in a trade last year from the Flyers, and he was supposed to be their go-to guy. And Justin Brown is a heart-and-soul captain. So there was a lot of question marks coming in, like, what happened during the regular season that just was just turned into them to be one of the biggest flops, because L.A. was considered to be, a top four team and maybe give a run to Vancouver just because they always seem to assemble the right prospects. Well, then in the trading deadline, they traded Jack Johnson, the defenseman, because they had depth. And that's when they got Jeff Carter from Columbus. And Carter really didn't take off and play great, but he gave Richards, you know, a winger that that was going to help him. And that sort of like started to turn a little bit. It has been more forceful in the playoffs. But at the end of the season, I think what happened, Earl, is basically they benefited by a coaching change. Daryl Sutter comes in after getting let go as general manager and so forth of after last season with Calgary. He was sitting on the sidelines, and he comes in as head coach, something he does a lot better than say, his work as a general manager. And then they bring up these two hard-nosed guys, Nolan and Dwight King, from their Manchester farm team, and they provided a fourth line that was just gave them some energy. And gradually, Kopitar and Carter and Richards and Dustin Brown and Dustin Penner were just better. And it just sort of, Earl, hit maybe the last 2 weeks of the season. Now, I believe in the last part of the season in which the coaching change was made, I believe they were 12-5-4. So they basically came on strong at the end and just made the playoffs. But again, nobody gave them much of a, you know, consideration just because of all the other teams in the West, especially Vancouver. St. Louis was my pick to be, you know, sort of the dark horse, if you want to call it that, even though they had the second best record in the West. I just thought the Blues were ready to thrive. But again, they didn't have the playoff experience a little bit. And the next team was Phoenix. So now you've got Nashville at 4, Detroit at 5, and Chicago at 6. And it just seemed like it's not going to happen for L.A. having to play Vancouver. But with the coaching change, Earl, and the fact that the players started to play, and Drew Doughty, too, is an elite defenseman. He may be in the top five now, and he probably will be, you know, in running for the Norris Trophy in future years because he is such a horse. He's only 23 years old, and he held out with sort of an ugly, messy contract situation, and I think that took some time for him to get over. So the second half of the season, he's been very good. In the playoffs, he's just been one of the better players. He is a candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy as the MVP of the playoffs, but I think that probably will go to Jonathan Quick. But certainly Kopitar and Drew Doughty, again, elite-level players. And when you have, like, an elite-level defenseman like that, a horse that can play, you know, 25, 35 minutes, that is just a great asset. And then you throw in Rob Scuderi, you throw in, you know, Matt Green, veteran Willie Mitchell, and then even Alec Martinez, the former Miami defenseman, has made it pretty big with them as a fifth, number five or six defenseman. That's a good, again, it's a good core, and they all came together at the right moment. And who knows why they're so good on the road, but it's just one of those things that everything that they have done has been, you know, good. They've gotten breaks, and they've earned their breaks, and the talent level right now is super. And you throw in the fact that the L.A. fans are just been dying for something like this. They've been so supportive over the, you know, last 2 years. They still come to the games. It's not like a Phoenix situation or a former Nashville where the fan base is low and frustrated. Now, they were frustrated, but they were still loyal and showing up. And now they're really, you know, showing up. And obviously they've been joined by some bandwagoners that love to, you know, cheer for winner like L.A. fans are noted for. But so it's a good atmosphere, and obviously they're probably going to win their first cup in the next couple days, and then obviously we'll see just what happens next year. And but it's got the making of a very good team in the West. So, again, when you throw in the Red Wings situation, it's another team that's now emerging that the Wings are going to have to, like, battle along with, like, the Vancouvers and the emerging St. Louis and maybe Phoenix and then again Nashville, too. So the Rings are just aren't like they used to be. Well, as one of the leaders, one or two leaders in the West, there's more people at the party now, and the L.A. Kings have certainly shown that they deserve to be at this party, and now we'll see if they can continue it. And I think they can. I'm not sure they can, you know, just automatically win another cup next year, but they still have the ingredients to make a little run here of about 4 or 5 years of being in the top 4 or 5 in the West. And if you're in that top 4, well, then obviously you're in the running for the Stanley Cup.
Okay, well, we got a caller on the line for you. We got Kirk from Grand Ledge. Kirk, how you doing?
Doing just fine, Earl. How are you?
Okay, buddy.
Good. Hey, Neil, how are you?
I'm good.
I have a question for you. It relates to the Red Wings, and I realize you're more of a college hockey guy, but you're a hockey guy, period. So here's my question. Nick Lidstrom has retired, and I give Nick a ton of credit to play that long at the level that he did. That's great, but I'm a forward-looking guy. I don't want to look back so much.
Sure.
And here's the one question I haven't really heard anybody really talk about. Who do you give the C to? Who do you make captain on next year's Red Wings team? Because you've now had a period of time where you've had first Steve Yzerman for how many years and then Nick Lidstrom for how many years as the captain, having excellent captaincies and stuff. Who needs to step up and take on that role?
I think the next captain of the Red Wings will be Henrik Zetterberg.
Okay.
You obviously have there's about 3 or 4 people that have been mentioned, including Pavel Datsyuk. But really, Pavel Datsyuk, to me, is just an exceptional talent that isn't as much of a leader as he is just a beautiful, skilled player and a good person. I think Zetterberg will take on the role of being the go-to guy in the dressing room and the go-to guy on the ice. He's been sort of that way anyhow as far as, like, leading by example and being in the background, but being part of the Red Wings' core of leaders. Now, I think you could say Nicholas Cronwell, too, is up there, and I'm certainly thinking that if Zetterberg is the captain, Cronwell will be an alternate captain and just part of the, the leadership group and all that. But I think Zetterberg is right out there. I'm not sure if, guys like Cleary and some of the others, Franzen, I don't think has to worry about his game and being more consistent. But Zetterberg is the veteran, and he's savvy, and he's well liked by his teammates, and he certainly has the work ethic and I think the right mindset. So I'm not saying it's a lock, but I think that's probably the way the Red Wings will go as far as filling their captaincy vacancy.
Was Zetterberg one of the alternates last year?
I believe he was. If I remember now, as him looking on the ice, and so I think he was wearing the A and has worn it for a few years here.
Okay, well, because that would make really good sense, I think. And, I agree with you in terms of Datsyuk. I mean, unbelievably skilled player and extremely hard worker on the ice. I'm always amazed for a guy his size, how he's never knocked off his skates.
His balance is phenomenal, right.
But he also strikes me as a guy who's kind of quiet. Probably in the locker room. I haven't been in a locker room, but my impression would be that he'd be kind of quiet in the locker room. And
the captain, too, has to just be accessible to the media almost every game, almost to the point where it's just annoying that you have to just answer the same questions, home and road, whatever, and there's some times where you just want to. And Pavel, his English is not the greatest. I mean, he's funny. He's got great stories, and he's very good with the media. But I don't think the fact that his analysis of when the team is struggling, whatever, would be appreciated as much as it would by Zetterberg, because Pavel can say it, but he doesn't have the analytical and the structure to really be in that role every day. You want Pavel just to do what he does best, and that is being a magician with the puck and being your one of your top 2 forwards and go-to guys. Whereas I think Hank embraces the little more personality of what's going on. He's not a Nick Lidstrom for sure, because nobody really is, but right. Or a Steve Yzerman and so forth. And as far as like leading with the team and then being the spokesman for the team, I think Zetterberg would fill that role pretty good, and I think he'll get some help from possibly like Cronwell as an alternate, and whether it's Cleary or one of the other heart and soul guys that is on the team, we'll see. But it's certainly an interesting question, and people have been raising it, a little bit here and there as Nick you know, goes into the retirement era. But I'm with you. I'm not as mourned about Lidstrom. I saw it coming, and I think the timing is good because it allows the Red Wings to have some cap space and to make some acquisitions that they normally wouldn't be able to do if Nick was back for another $7-8 million or so, or $6-7 million or so. And I think he certainly could have played. I think he could have played at an okay, but I completely understand and admire the fact that he wanted to go out with his skills intact and a high level, playing all these games and still having the reputation as just, you know, an elite level defenseman, and not risk the fact that next year you might struggle just a bit, or the skill level would drop a little bit, and that's a tough thing to do for an athlete as proud and as talented as Nick Lidstrom. So you move on, and it should be a very interesting and fun off season as the Red Wings try to, you know, reassemble some parts and acquire some new stars and some, you know, new directions. So it's one of those times where we aren't used to, because the Red Wings always just sort of like, you know, added a little bit here and there and kept things going. But now there's opportunity. So Ken Holland and his staff are really going to be challenged this summer to come up with the right players and the right mix, along with some, you know, make some draft choices and so forth, and build the farm system. But right now there are certainly some they're missing, and those are the challenge for those Red Wing people, is to try to find the best solutions.
Okay, Neil, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and giving us more insight on the Stanley Cup Finals. Yes, it looks like it's the Kings' year, and hey, I know hockey season will be right around the corner for Michigan State, so we'll look forward to talking to you again in the near future, my friend, talk more hockey with you.
Earl, I just want you to know, though, that when Ricardo Cooney and I made this bet, the bet was, let's make a bet on the Stanley Cup Finals. Who do you want? And Rico, of course, Mr. Frontrunner, said, oh, I got the Kings. And just to make it fun, I said, okay, I'll take the Devils. Because my thinking was, I was rooting for the Kings to get them the cup, to give L.A. their first. But I thought, well, if I'm really sad that the Kings don't win, the Devils win, at least I'll get a sarsaparilla out of it from Rico, and I won't feel as bad. But I knew going in that it was. But the thing Rico doesn't tell you, too, is the fact that in the first round of the playoff, or second round, he said to me when the Devils were playing Philly, I don't think the Devils have a chance to even win a game. Ooh. And I thought, when the Devils did win against Philly, I said, geez, it's funny how they didn't have a chance to win a game, and yet they won four games.
Yeah.
And, of course, Rico's comment was, yeah, I can't believe that. I can't believe that. And then he sort of moved right past that.
The
Devils have done well. They just haven't done as well as the Kings. And I think we're all going to find this out on Wednesday when the hockey season comes to an end.
Okay, Neil. Hey, good talking with you, my friend. And we'll talk again real soon, buddy.
Thanks, Earl. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. That's Neil Koepke, Spartan blogger, talking a little hockey, a little in HL hockey today, right here on Sports Talk 870, as we're in the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, stay tuned for more Sports Talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Guitar gods like Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and countless others use words like legend, master, and the greatest of all time to describe Buddy Guy. I'm Neil Conan. When I Left Home, Buddy Guy's Story. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today will be partly sunny with isolated light showers and a high in the low 70s, partly cloudy with a low of 50 tonight. It'll be partly sunny tomorrow with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, the high 75, warming up to 78 for a high Thursday, partly sunny that day. I'm Scott Paul.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk at www.AMA870.org. We're going to hope to talk a little bit with Dave Mayo from MLive.com and talk about the upcoming fight and the NBA draft. He's getting prepared for the NBA draft also. So we'll touch on both those subjects with Dave Mayo. But you can give us a call at Talk Sports with us right here on AMA870 WKAR. We also want to tell you the Diamond Classic, the final game is coming up tonight, 7 o'clock. I think I made a mistake, Aaron, and told you it was going to be Wednesday, but it's tonight at 7 o'clock over at the Cooley Law School Stadium. It should be a very good game between Grand Ledge and East Lansing. That's coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. So I had a couple of cuts from last night's game, Grand Ledge and East Lansing. Both had good pitching outing, and let's first hear from Mike Pendred, who's the head coach of East Lansing, on their pitching performance.
Tyler is fantastic tonight. You know, he came out and threw a lot of strikes, and him being our, you know, basically our number three all year, to come out and do what he did was awful good.
It was. He was very good last night, that's for sure. And then we heard from Coach Pat O'Keefe on his pitching performance last night.
Well, Cody mixes his pitches up really well and does a good job. And and he throws strikes, and, you know, and that's an important thing in pitching. I mean, if you're walking people, then all of a sudden, you know, it turns into big innings when you make an error or you know, somebody comes up with a big hit.
That's for sure. So had two good performances, and now we'll meet Grand Ledge, of course, and East Lansing will meet tonight at 7 o'clock in the championship of the 51st Annual Dean Shippey Diamond Classic. And I had some more information for you. I don't think I brought it in with me today, but some more information on the Diamond Classic. It should be, the finals should be a very good game. Grand Ledge is probably a slight favorite to win over East Lansing. East Lansing and Grand Ledge were both eliminated from the state playoffs. So this is good. They're both very high on winning the Diamond Classic. Both teams really look forward to playing the Diamond Classic year in and year out. So it should be a very good game. Hopefully you can get out to the field out there to the field, and you can watch that. You know, the Midwestern League All-Star Game coming up, which I mentioned, told you about the seven players that were invited from the Lansing team, from the Lansing Lugnuts. So it should be a good game tonight for the high school kids. They love to get out there and play on it. So you should see a very good game. Hopefully, a lot of you will get out there. Anyway, it's game time at 7 o'clock at Cooley Law School Stadium. That's 7 o'clock at Cooley Law School Stadium. That's the Grand Ledge and East Lansing. So hopefully you'll get there. I know a lot of you I saw a lot of you out there last night. Hopefully you have even a bigger crowd tonight for that championship game. 7 o'clock tonight. And we're talking to sports right here on AM870 WKAR. And let's see. We played the two cuts, so we got those out the way. So now we're just looking at doing a little bit more. So now, are you going to go with me tonight, Aaron? I know you were talking about Wednesday, but now the game is tonight. So can you go with me tonight?
Not sure. Yeah, I'll recheck my schedule. Yeah, I thought it was on Wednesday. So.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to recheck my schedule on that. But it sounds like, you know, I guess we've been talking the whole time that Grand Ledge was expected to win the thing, so they're here, so I guess we'll find out and wait and see.
Yes, they're going to have a good game against East Lansing. East Lansing put up 11 runs up against Lansing Catholic the other night. They scored 7 runs in the second inning, then 4 in the third, and that put the game away for them. And Grand Ledge had just a one-hit shutout by their pitcher. They won 5-0. So it should be a very good game between two really good teams in the Diamond Classic tonight. And a lot of us that follow high school baseball, you should be in store for a huge, huge treat between those two games. Two of the best teams in the Mid-Michigan area. So, you know, I like baseball a lot. And hopefully, if you like baseball as much, you just go out to see a good game between two good teams. And hey, when you're talking East Lansing and Grand Ledge, you're talking about two of the best teams here, not only in the Mid-Michigan area, but in the state. Even though they're not going to be in the hunt for the state championship, they're still two of the best teams that are there, Grand Ledge is and East Lansing as well. And sometimes, as you know, the ball just doesn't bounce your way in baseball. But there are two excellent teams. Should be a very good game, and you can see that tonight at Cooley Law School Stadium. So it should be a good one, Aaron, and we'll look out for that one tonight. This is AM 870 WKAR, and hopefully if you, you had a chance to see the game. And also, you might have read about the Big Ten preference in playoffs in football. The Big Ten commissioner, Jim Delaney, says they want a committee formed and to select the four teams that plays. And, you know, everybody has their own idea. The SEC, and they have a different idea. I think the Big 12 has a little different where they want it done. So everybody has their idea. So this is the time this summer, try to get together to figure out how it's going to be at for the future. And that's the problem, Aaron. Everybody has their own ideas of how they want things done. So I don't know what it's going to, how it's going to end up, but they're saying, at least Jim Delaney does that they want a committee to select the four teams that will play for the national championship.
Yeah, and then you're back in the same boat again, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're letting a committee decide, how is that any different than what it is now? I mean, you know, you're letting, then it's going to happen where the fourth team that gets in or something, and the fifth team that doesn't, they're going to argue. Well, yep. I'm sure there'll be something that, hey, why aren't we in? You know, mm-hmm. So you know, that's not going to fix their problem. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe there's certain things I'm sure there's probably things I don't know yet, but. Yeah, everyone's got their different ideas, and you know, I mean, it makes for great debating in sports.
Yes, it does.
It does, but I that's not going to fix their problem. I don't think anyone knows what the problem is or how to fix it. So, I mean, they're trying. So, I guess we got to give them that.
Yeah, they're trying to get it right. They're trying, like you. I'm not sure how it's going to all play out in the end. That's for sure. But I guess, like you say, yeah, they're trying. But everybody has their own idea. All these the Big Ten presidents have their own idea. The Big Ten commissioner has this idea. Coaches all have their ideas. Everybody has an idea, and they put it all in a hat. You know, I have a vote out on one of the polls, and so you know, I don't know if they'll keep it. They say they want to do away with all the polls, whether they're the computer polls or the polls that the people vote on. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out it that way. So we'll just have to wait and see. But at least we know this year it's going to be the same for the next year or two. And you know, if it stays the same, it's not that bad. They want the two best teams playing the championship game. Well, most of the time, they've done a good job of that over the past 5 to 6 years. Most of the time, you figure it out who the two teams are. Now, last year, there was some debate, but it's still, most people thought that LSU and Alabama were the two best teams in college football. There was some credence for Oklahoma State being in there, but, you know, they lost late. The thing is, you just can't lose late in the season. If you lose early, you can probably overcome that and get back in the hunt. But if you lose late, boy, you're almost doomed. And that's what it seems like almost whenever a team is eliminated, it's because they lost late, like Boise State did that year. They lost to Nevada. I think that was last year or the year before. And they lost late, and they were just totally wiped out. So the best thing you can do is lose early. Don't lose late, because you're doomed if you lose late.
Yeah, right. Which, you know, if you think about it from a sports perspective, that's a crazy idea. As if losing in the beginning is different than losing in the end. How a game is a game. I don't, you know, the system is set up to where if you do well at the beginning of the season, which a lot of teams, you know, obviously first game or two, you're probably playing weaker teams, but then you get into your conference and maybe play not a non-conference game or something. But, you know, we see teams like Michigan State will play Boise State coming up, but, you know, that's it, to punish a team because they lose late in the season, but say they hadn't lost, you know, anything before that, but because they lost late in the season, the way the system is set up, they get punished the most because they lost late in the season. They didn't lose early in the season to maybe even a better team. You know, come on, that's not fair.
It's not fair.
That's not how sports works. A game is a game. I mean, it doesn't matter when you – I mean, sure – if it's a last game and you're talking about getting into a playoff system, that's different. But, you know, we're talking college football here. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is, and for the next couple of years, it's going to have to be what it is. Yeah, but you're right. They have got the number one and number two teams right. But does it – I mean, sure, they get it right, but does it make it a good game? No. Because we've seen that the last couple of years. I mean, the games have been – you know, they've just been defensive battles, and it's kind of been boring games, really. But, you know, they get it right for the most part. I'll give them credit on that. We got a caller coming in.
Okay. Yes, they get it right, and we'll see, have to see if they keep getting it right, or at least having, as they say, the two best teams from the polls, whether it's the mail poll or the computer poll. We'll have to see if they keep getting it right, and if they do ever get to go to a system where people will make the votes, and that will be, yeah. And as Aaron says, yeah, that causes another problem too, because then everybody's going to be thinking, who are making the decisions. Is it four guys from four different schools? Does their school get left out? It's got a lot of intriguing things to answer about. That's for sure. Hey, well, let's go to the phone. We got Mr. Pate from Atlanta, Georgia. How you doing?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Okay.
Thank you for having me on. Taking the time out to have me on. I listen to you pretty often, Mr. Robinson. You do an excellent job, so I definitely want to let you know of that.
Thank you.
Now, oh, no, absolutely, no problem. I know I've heard some comments coming from Mr. Jim Delaney and what he had to say about maybe possibly putting together some playoff and stuff like that, the four teams and whatnot, the best four teams in the country. Now, how we're going to see, how do we judge what those four teams are? I'm not exactly sure yet. I think that's probably the biggest concern. But as you guys were mentioning, I'm a big Michigan State fan myself. I'm actually from Lansing. But, when it comes to a team like a Michigan State where they got punished a little bit, did so well in the beginning of the season, like you guys were saying, and later on lost to Wisconsin, they didn't get a chance to get that that Rose Bowl berth. I think that was kind of a baloney. But, sometimes I don't think it's only so much of, everyone making a point, the commissioners and whomever, whatnot, of, when you lose or at what point during the season you lose, but more or less, by how much that margin is that you lose to, and then even the caliber of the team that you lost to, I think that also has to be taken into consideration when you're talking about putting together a playoff.
Oh, yes, it does, usually don't have, just two undefeated teams. Usually there's three, sometimes there's four. Very rarely is there more than four teams, but if you have two undefeated teams, you're in pretty good shape depending on the caliber of the conference that they play in. And sometimes I've been one that I've never been a big fan of some of the teams from the smaller conferences that go undefeated and giving them a chance to play for the national title. I know some people are in favor of that. I've never been a big fan of that because I think you need to play a tough schedule. If that season you and that gets you tougher. So if a team plays a tough schedule, I'm for that. And I think if you play a tough schedule, especially in a non-conference game, if you're in a weak conference, that's all you can do to enhance your chances.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Robinson, for having me on. Hey, you guys keep on doing a good job. You guys have a blessed day.
Okay. Thank you, too, Mr. Pate. We'll talk to you later. Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that's Mr. Pate from Atlanta, Georgia. So we've been talking a lot of sports today. And, yes, it's going to take – it's really going to be a challenge for, if they adopt either a Commissioner Delaney style or the SEC style or which is the four plus one. Some want that one. It's going to be interesting to see what style they finally adapt in the end and how it all plays out. That's for sure. So, Aaron, I know you've got your feelings on it. I've got my feelings on it. It'll be interesting just to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I can't wait till they have a game plan in place, and then we're back to right where we were, and they didn't see things coming a certain way, and then we're back to debating how to fix that one again. So it might just be a rotation here, but nonetheless, they're trying. We're debating about it, and it makes it fun.
Okay. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking with you today, and I want to invite you to come out to Cooley Law School Stadium tonight for the championship game of the Diamond Classic between Grand Ledge and East Lansing. That's at 7 o'clock tonight, so we'll see you there. Hopefully, you'll be there, and I'll meet and greet you there at the Diamond Classic. Hey, Thank you all for coming and calling. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. I want you to have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening, and come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.